everyone. This is Jeffrey Kerr. I'm back with the May 2022 installment of the News of the Month series on the Kerr Reviews podcast. This is where I talk about a few different entertainment news stories that feel important and or interesting to me. Each of the stories you'll be hearing me talk about have been divided into four separate categories. The first set of them is about another update regarding the Wicked film. I've previously discussed different updates about Universal's long-awaited movie adaptation of the Broadway smash, from John M. Chu getting hired as director to the casting of the two leads. Now, we have ourselves a release date, or shall I say release dates, as it was recently announced that the film will be split into two parts. Part 1 will be released on Christmas Day in 2024, while Part 2 will be released on Christmas Day in 2025. What I'm about to do right now is read out loud a letter John M. Chu posted on his social media regarding the announcement. "Thank you for all the support these past several months in anticipation of the Wicked movie. We have so many exciting things to share, but for now I'm giving you one, or two rather. Here's what happened. As we prepared this production over the last year, it became increasingly clear that it would be impossible to wrestle the story of Wicked into a single film without doing some real damage to it. As we tried to cut songs or trim characters, those decisions began to feel like fatal compromises to the source material that has entertained us all for so many years. So we decided to give ourselves a bigger canvas and make not just one Wicked movie, but two. With more space, we can tell the story of Wicked as it was meant to be told while bringing even more depth and surprise to the journeys of these beloved characters. Cynthia Erivo, Ariana Grande, and I, and all of the cast and crew, pledge to create nothing less than an experience that honors its foundation for all the fans who've waited for this movie, and to offer a thrilling, fantastical world full of dynamic characters that invites in those who are unfamiliar. So get ready, because Wicked is finally coming to you on successive Christmas holidays beginning December 2024. Until then, I will be keeping you up to date throughout rehearsals, the shoot, and even editing. Here we go." Now, this decision has already proven to be very divisive among fans of the musical. Now, the stage version typically runs about 2.5 hours long, with or without an intermission. So fans have obviously been questioning, is this really necessary? Now, I've never read the original novel by Gregory Maguire, but I'm guessing that they're gonna try to flesh out both acts of the stage version with stuff from the novel that wasn't included in the stage musical, and I'm pretty much assuming that the first part will cover Act 1 while the second part will be covering Act 2. Therefore, the first movie will pretty much end with Defying Gravity, which is the Act 1 finale of the stage version, while the second movie begins with the Act 2 opener, Thank Goodness. I mean, I'll be curious to see how they end up fleshing out the world, the characters, and all that. I mean, after all, you know, fantasy movies are hard to pull off, and part of it is because of the world building. Though I guess once Part 2 is released, people will watch Part 1 and Part 2 back-to-back and really appreciate the whole experience of watching Wicked as a movie. That's pretty much what we're all expecting with Denis Villeneuve's film adaptation of the Frank Herbert science fiction novel Dune. We currently only have Part 1, while Part 2 will begin shooting this summer, and by the time Dune Part 2 comes out, I'm sure people will be watching Dune Parts 1 and 2 back-to-back and really appreciate the whole experience of Denis Villeneuve's cinematic vision of that story. Though, imagine if Wicked Part 1 flops at the box office. I have no idea what would happen then, given that the second part will already be on the way at that point. Which is kind of similar to discussions people have regarding the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Director Peter Jackson famously shot all three film adaptations of J.R.R. Tolkien's epic fantasy novel at once, as opposed to making each of them one at a time. If Fellowship of the Ring had flopped, who knows what would have happened with The Two Towers and Return of the King, since they were both already on the way. Though, if Wicked Parts 1 and 2 both turn out to be commercially successful, then it could prove to be a bit of a lucrative movie franchise for Universal, like how the property of the stage musical already has been as an entity for the company. I also wonder if the studio might then consider creating some sort of attraction based on the film adaptations for one of their theme parks in, like, Hollywood or Orlando or any other of their international destinations. I don't know what the attraction itself would be, but in a way, if done right, I think it could be really cool. Of course, only time will tell if the decision to split Wicked into two movies will pay off or not. But, hey, I'm at least curious to see how they're going to do it. This next news story is about The Hunger Games. Now, I'm not a big book reader. There are only a few novels I've actually read. In fact, there are several others I started, but never got around to finishing. Among the books I actually have read from beginning to end is The Hunger Games trilogy by Suzanne Collins. I remember all the hype surrounding the first movie during my junior year of high school from when the trailer dropped, so I decided to give the original novel a read while listening to the audiobook to prepare myself for it. I was glad I did because I was drawn into the characters and the world. Plus, the end of each chapter really had me on edge to find out what was going to happen next. When I first saw the movie opening weekend over 10 years ago at this point, I was very impressed with how the filmmakers reimagined the story cinematically. After that, I read and listened to both sequels, Catching Fire and Mockingjay, within like the next month and a half. Looking back, it's kind of remarkable I managed to read all three of them given my reading habits, especially nowadays. Though, let's get on with the main point of this topic. In 2019, a prequel novel was announced while Lionsgate, which produced the movies, was already in talks for a film adaptation. The book was released in 2020 under the title of The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. The story follows a young Coriolanus Snow many years before he eventually becomes president of Panem as he mentors and develops feelings for the female District 12 tribute during the 10th Hunger Games. I haven't gotten around to reading it myself yet, but I am planning to listen to the audiobook narrated by Santino Fontana. Francis Lawrence, who previously helmed the film adaptations of Catching Fire as well as Mockingjay Parts 1 and 2, will be at the helm of this movie. A release date was recently revealed at CinemaCon in Las Vegas. The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes will be coming out on November 17th, 2023. No cast has been revealed yet, though nonetheless, I should be able to have listened to the audiobook by then. May the odds for this project be ever in its favor. This next news story is about Dancing with the Stars. I've actually been watching ABC's long-running reality competition series since the very first season back in 2005. When I joined Gold Derby in 2017, Dancing with the Stars immediately became one of the things I've been providing coverage for on the website, which has included creating casting polls for celebrities I think should compete in future seasons. So far, only two of them actually came true, which were Frankie Muniz in 2017 and Kel Mitchell in 2019. Though the big news regarding Dancing with the Stars that came out this past month is that the upcoming 31st and 32nd seasons will be moving away from ABC and air on Disney+. The reason for this is because ABC is planning to present Monday Night Football for the 8 to 10 p.m. time slot on Monday nights this fall. That time slot has been occupied by Dancing with the Stars for the past 15 years. The people at Disney are hoping that the show's big following will translate into new viewers as well as additional subscribers for the streaming platform. In fact, this will actually be the very first live series to air on Disney+. Corinne Daniel, who's the current chairman for Disney Media and Entertainment Distribution, said in a press release that went, "The show's broad appeal, as well as the overwhelming popularity of its Disney-themed competition nights, make Disney+ the perfect home for Dancing with the Stars while continuing to expand our demographic reach. I'm certainly curious to see how this experiment will turn out. People nowadays seem to be more interested in catching up with TV shows after they originally air as opposed to watching them live as they debut. By going this direction, we'll likely never know how successful the show is given that streaming services in general rarely ever reveal their viewership data. If the experiment works, then maybe some award shows like the Oscars can become streaming exclusives at some point and hopefully have all categories presented during the broadcast. Just saying. For our final subject, I'd like to take this moment to remember five industry veterans we've lost within this past month. Actress Estelle Harris died of natural causes on April 2nd at the age of 93. She was best known for her role as Estelle Costanza on Seinfeld, as well as voicing Mrs. Potato Head in the Toy Story sequels. Actor-singer Bobby Rydell died of pneumonia on April 5th at the age of 79. He came on the scene as a teen idol in the early 1960s. Among his acting credits was playing Hugo Peabody in the 1963 movie musical Bye Bye Birdie. In the 1980s, he joined a trio called the Golden Boys with fellow former teen idols Frankie Avalon and Fabian Forte. In fact, something I didn't know until recently is that the fictional Rydell High School from the musical Grease was actually named after Bobby Rydell. Actress Ray Allen died in her sleep on April 6th at the age of 95. She had 14 Broadway credits to her name, which included originating the role of Gloria Thorpe in the musical Damn Yankees, which she got to reprise in its subsequent 1958 film adaptation, as well as her Tony-winning performance in Paul Zindel's 1971 play And Miss Reardon Drinks a Little. General audiences may recognize Ray Allen from her recurring roles on different TV shows such as All in the Family and The Sopranos. She also appeared on the big screen in 1992's A League of Their Own and 1994's Stargate. Actor-comedian Gilbert Gottfried died of ventricular tachycardia on April 12th at the age of 67. He was best known for voicing Iago in the 1992 Disney animated film Aladdin, as well as the Affleck duck in all the commercials for the insurance company Affleck. In fact, following the curtain call of the April 12th performance of the Broadway production of Aladdin, current Iago, Don Darryl Rivera, came out to pay tribute to Gilbert Gottfried. It's up on YouTube, and I've provided a link to it in the episode notes. Actor Robert Morse died of a heart failure on April 20th at the age of 90. After having started out his Broadway career with appearances in The Matchmaker, Say Darling, and Take Me Along, he officially became a star as the original J. Pierpont Finch in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, which won him the first of his two Tony Awards. When United Artists was getting ready to bring that musical to the big screen with a movie adaptation, Dick Van Dyke was considered for Finch, but he turned it down due to his concerns of being too old for the role, so the filmmakers instead ended up keeping Robert Morse. This marked the second time he reprised one of his theatrical roles on screen, the first being in a 1958 film adaptation of Thornton Wilder's The Matchmaker, where he played Barnaby Tucker. Although Morse did eventually win a Primetime Emmy Award in 1993 for his performance as Truman Capote in PBS's broadcast of J. Preston Allen's one-man show, True, which previously won him a second Tony, he was one of only six actors to have won Tony Awards for both lead actor in a play and lead actor in a musical. The other five are Harvey Fierstein, Rex Harrison, Kevin Kline, Christopher Plummer, and Zero Mostel. In fact, Robert Morse actually got to play the wizard in Wicked while that musical was out of town in San Francisco before Joel Grey eventually took over for its Broadway premiere. Morse's final mainstem credit was in the most recent revival of The Front Page back in 2016. General audiences may also know Robert Morse from his role as Bertram Cooper on the AMC drama series Mad Men. My condolences go out to all of their families. So that's just about does it for the news of this month. I will be back on June 6th to discuss any bits of entertainment news stories that I found interesting and or important from May. If you love this show, please leave us a review. Go to ratethispodcast.com/carereviewspodcast and follow the simple instructions. Feel free to subscribe to wherever you get this podcast. If you'd like to find more content from me, please visit my website, which is www.carereviews.net. You can also find it on Twitter at @carereviews and me at @JeffreyCare. Thanks for listening, and I will see you all later.